other horns don't.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you win.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, this is our spring wrap-up. We've seen 15 practices, the most publicized being A-Day, numerous position auditions, seven quarterbacks, newly minted superstars returning to action in the person of Cooper and Yeldon, four players at least returning from season-ending injury, and several early enrollees making their debut for the Tide. What was your single biggest takeaway?
Man, this game was frustrating. More so than games in the past. This had to be the most frustrating A-Day game I have seen since Saban has been there, besides maybe his first year.
Any sort of inter-squad game like this is going to be a little bit frustrating, right? Because it's your right hand, you know, wrestling against your left hand, right? Anything you win is something that you also lose. You know, elaborate on what maybe – you know, seven turnovers, that's frustrating from an offensive standpoint. It's good to see us get the ball seven times. What, you know, that's, I guess that's what I'm talking about. What was the unsatisfactory to you?
When Saban first got there, he didn't have the depth built up yet. And so we saw a lot of guys that we know aren't going to be there when the game is on the line. And to me, between the injuries and the yet another year of losing juniors to the pros, I don't think the depth is there right now for my comfort level. Last year, I got to see TJ Yeldon, who I was really, really anxious to see. I got to see him juke CJ Mosley at midfield on a short pass and just outrun the best linebacker on our team. You know, I wanted to see an aha moment in this game. And between young players like Derrick Henry getting hurt, between other veteran players like Xavier Dixon, Trey Dupree, players like this not in the game, I just didn't enjoy this game. Let me just give you a couple highlights. You know, so I get to see, you know, our tight end go and catch a first down pass against Tana Patrick. Okay, what did that show me? I get to see Kenny Bell beat Cyrus Jones on a long touchdown pass at the beginning of the game, a guy that's only been over there for, you know, 15 practices. Okay. I get to see a freshman tight end and free tag blow a block on Ryan Anderson. So Ryan Anderson blows up a play in the backfield. Okay. Does that tell me how good Ryan Anderson is going to be? No, it doesn't. So I saw numerous times where a guy that should have beat another guy on a play, he beat him. I didn't get to see mano a mano, you know, good against good enough.
No, that's fair. And, you know, I don't think anyone's going to give a sympathy for going pro. I think that's virtually a given. I will agree with you on some of those things. We had a number of guys injured. You certainly listed off some of those. John Fulton was a player that I expected to have a role in spring practice, and it didn't happen. You know, Derrick Henry getting banged up certainly was a disappointment. He was kind of lighting up spring, and so he's someone that we were all kind of certainly excited to see. But I think that there were some outstanding individual opportunities, and as we get going through here, I'm going to hopefully point out some of them and maybe buoy your spirit a little bit. I think I'm going to take exception to certainly one of the things you called out, on the Kenny Bell touchdown. So, you know, we can get going on some of those. Why don't we just jump into some of the more specific things that we saw? And why don't you kick us off with something that you saw on offense?
You know, one of the questions that we had going into spring, we started with the offensive line. And, you know, you had made the comment that, you know, the main position here is who's going to take left guard. Well, I think you and I both saw when we watched this together that right tackle position, Austin Shepherd either really, really doesn't want to let it go or we might be about to break our string of JUCO guys coming in and starting right away.
Yeah, boy, that's, you know, I can go left or right on that. I think Austin Shepherd, you know, he tastes blood in the water. There's an open spot that he backed up last year. He was, you know, essentially Fluker's backup, and he has an opportunity as a fourth-year guy on campus to really solidify that spot. And I think that he really did. I think, and you know, we kind of commented and, you know, maybe joked a little bit that when we look at Leon Brown, he is more Kendrick Lott than he is James Carpenter. And that's not to say that only being 15 practices in, that's who he is, but that's who he showed himself to be on Saturday.
Well, it is. And you know, we got to catch some glimpses of practice thanks to the guys at AL.com. And they show a lot of good footage for a couple minutes that they get to witness practices. And he didn't seem to me to have it in that fifth gear yet. You know, that might have more to do with, you know, trying to get all the offense down and being able to play freely at full speed. And, you know, you never know, things might look a little different in August. But right now, I'm not saying Austin Shepherd lit it up. Let me be very clear. But he was clearly the best guy at right tackle on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he performed at a level, you know, Leon Brown, I'm so tempted to say that he was playing the game in his head as opposed to, you know, with his feet. You know, I guess by that meaning he's thinking through every play and what is the play that we're running, as opposed to just instinctively knowing, because he's spent that much time doing reps and watching, you know, studying game film and being immersed in the offense, and that when he's up to speed, then, you know, the game will slow down for him, and then he can just play with his athleticism. I so want to see that, but there were times where he truly did have a one-on-one with a much smaller guy, and just out of frustration, he should have been able to just push a smaller man to the ground or push a smaller man away, and I did not see it. I did not see that. So, again, I want to be careful. I'm not writing him off this early in the process, but he has a lot of ground to make up, and I think the gap between where he is today and where Austin is today, I don't know if he can make up that much ground before the start of the season.
Well, to your point, you would have wanted him just to be able to dial in and lock on to somebody, right, and just ride them. And I didn't see that. I didn't see that pancake mentality, if you would. What did you think about Airy? I kind of felt like sometimes he was, when he didn't have a guy in pass protection, he was keeping an eye on his brother and giving his brother some help. There were other times where, you know, he still looked a little lost, and he let some guys come in the scene between him and Ryan Kelly. And, you know, there was a mixed bag there for me.
Yeah, I think a mixed bag. I think he's a work in progress. You know, he's had a couple significant knee injuries, and there was, you know, a time where, you know, we thought maybe his playing days were over. And so the fact that he got out there and got to compete, you know, is demonstrating some tenacity and some resolve. I'm very proud of that. I think it would be neat to see a Kwanjo side of the line. I don't know that he necessarily outright wins the position. I think the gap, I talked about the gap between Brown and Shepherd. I think the gap between Ari and the next guy, Kellen Williams. You know, perhaps. I think that is a much narrower gap, such that it really could be made up. And then you think about, you know, the Brandon Green and the Brandon Hill and the Alfonso Taylor, which, you know, they were harder to kind of spotlight in this game. But I do think that the gap that they would have to an Ari is much more narrow. And I think that, you know, it's not a throw the blanket over the position and just pick one, but I think that over the course of the summer, putting in the hard work and the hard work at camp, that Ari can be overtaken. Whether it'll happen or not, I don't know, but I could see definitely where it would. Shepherd, on the other hand, I think it'll be much tougher, much more difficult to unseat him.
Yeah, I disagree with you on Airy. I just wanted to point out that I think he's still picking things up because he really hasn't been worked at left guard before spring because he had been working at right guard. But Kellen Williams showed me squat. So I think there is a much wider gap. I think Airy has no reason to look over his shoulder of the backup senior who should be showing a lot more than he is showing as a senior.
Wow. All right. So we have a little bit of disagreement there on those two positions. So that'll keep it, that'll certainly keep it interesting going into, you know, through summer workouts and into fall camp. So that's something that, but you and I will have to keep an eye on and, you know, we can just, you know, confirm in the fall that how right I was today, but that's fine.
Yeah, I hear you. let's talk about a little Blake Sims, man. I had to start offensive line, but let's just quickly jump to the meat of this discussion. Blake Sims on that first and down.
While you do this, I'm just going to go get a glass of water because I know you're going to be in a minute.
Man, on that first and 10 play, when he comes into that game and he throws the ball and he's on his back foot and he's off his back foot, he's trying to throw it out of bounds and Nick Perry intercepts it. First of all, Dave Neal points out, it was first and 10, Blake Sims, just in case you don't realize this. Second of all, the ball was thrown so poorly that Reggie Ragland or Nick Perry could have either one of them intercepted that ball. And then the play he made in the end zone where he just showed Nick Perry where the ball was going on the other pick, Nick Perry had to be loving him some Blake Sims on Saturday.
Yeah, Nick Perry picked him off twice. You know, during camp, during the practices, there seemed to be a lot of favorable press to Blake Sims. And, you know, the earlier scrimmages, you know, the numbers were pretty good. You know, practice, you know, some of the folks that attended some of those practices, the scrimmages came out and said, hey, look, you know, he's a better passer than, you know, what most of you guys are talking about. And I did not see it.
But he only threw 10 passes all of last year.
Well, that's fine. That doesn't mean he's not capable. You know, everyone comes in. You know, everyone has to start somewhere. What I'm saying is I just don't see – I don't see that he has it. I do not see that that he truly is going to be the backup quarterback. I still think it's Alec Morris, and we can talk him. But I have – and I kind of teased the other night when you and I were watching the game. I have a theory, though, on where he is in the lineup and why he's there. I think coach knows that the spread option and zone read and the running quarterbacks is not necessarily his forte, and it's not necessarily what he wants to do, but he knows that we are going to face it. He knows that it is a dynamic wrinkle, and he knows more than anything we have to practice against the darn thing. And there used to be a day where you could just take a wide receiver and, you know, for this week of prep, he's going to play the quarterback. Well, you can't do that when you have so many high caliber, you know, Johnny Manziel type quarterbacks that you're going to have to face. And so I think that he wants to recruit. He did it with Star Jackson. I think he did it with Burton Scott. And, you know, and now we have Blake Sims. I think he wants an athletic quarterback that he can do two things with, that he can have someone primarily to give the defense a good look. But you can't recruit a four-star athlete whose primary objective is to give the defense a good look. So he's going to take that guy, give him a wrinkle, and then put him intentionally at the front of the line to be a backup quarterback. And so it's almost like, you know, hey, on offense, there's 17 starters. There's not 11. There's 17 of them. Well, the zone read quarterback is starter number 18 in sort of the Saban mentality. And I think that's the theory I have around, you know, Blake Sims continually being given an extra opportunity. It's to keep him around, to keep him happy, giving him, rewarding him with playing time for primarily being a look guy, preparing the defense.
Okay. I'm back from my glass of water now. Do you want me to go get another one?
No, I'm good.
All right. First of all, you're way nicer than I am. Second of all, to Blake Sims, he got a college scholarship of all things to Alabama, which I didn't get a scholarship to anywhere. So obviously he's a much better athlete than I ever was. But as Don said, I can't think of Don's last name, one of the AL.com beat writers, he was like, just go ahead and make him your Wildcat quarterback and get it over with. I'm sorry. Blake Sims, we were saying before the spring practice that we thought him and Phillip would transfer. I think wholeheartedly they're both going to transfer. I do not know why they're there. Whether it was Phillip throwing a ball 10 yards behind the receiver and 5 yards over his head, or it was Blake Sims doing it, I couldn't keep up with it. It's just a waste of resources. I'm sorry. If I'm Alex Morris and we're not at practice and we're not watching the reps they're getting, but if Blake Sims is getting more reps than Alex Morris right now, and you've got a senior quarterback who could easily get hurt again and this time not come back into the game, Saban's making the wrong call. And obviously, I'm being an armchair quarterback, and he's a great coach, and I'm not. But I think this has run its course, and it's going to hurt the team this year, if your theory is correct.
Well, I think my theory can be correct. This is a tough topic to explain because it's not black and white. I'm not saying that he is the backup quarterback. I'm saying that he's being given an opportunity to be, call it the Wildcat, I don't care, but the zone read, the running quarterback, in exchange for giving the scout team.
I heard what all you said, man. He was the backup last year. He was clearly the backup last year.
And we know why that was, too, because we needed a take the air out of the ball running back when Fowler went down. And I think that was plausible then. I think this is plausible now.
If we got into a
situation where we needed extended quarterback play, I still think it's Alec Morris.
All right. We're up 31-7 in the second half against Virginia Tech. Does Blake Sims come in the game to fumble the ball, or does Alex Morris come in the game?
In that situation,
if it's not Alex Morris, I'm not a happy camper.
Well, you know, we're talking about hypotheticals in very specific situations. I think Blake would get playing time because of this role, because of, you know, this arrangement almost, if you will. But if we were in the first quarter of a game and we needed someone to start for the next 3 weeks, I think it's Alec Morris.
Well,
and so that's two different things.
No. If your theory holds and Alex Morris is not coming in as the next guy behind AJ to get reps that we need for the following football season, or if AJ goes down, that is a mistake. If Blake Sims comes in and gets action all season for the reasons you just mentioned, and those are reps that an Alex Morris or a Cooper Bateman or whoever needs to be that guy, then that is a mistake.
Yeah,
week in and week out.
I hear what you're saying. Hopefully we can get reps. You know, I agree. We need to get reps for Alec Morris, and every rep that Blake gets is potentially a rep that Alec is not. So I don't disagree with that. I just think there's a reason for what's happening that's something different than the coach doesn't see that Blake can't play.
Oh, there has to be, because otherwise it doesn't explain itself.
Right.
As to why he's still the second guy. What else jumped out at you on offense? We didn't really get to see as much of O.J. Howard as I wanted.
Yeah, we can talk about the tight end position. We did not see as much of him as I expected. He's a guy that I thought would be, an offensive breakout player, you know, especially for the youngsters. I think he has a lot of talent, and we're going to see that. We just didn't see it. You know, one of the things, and I'm probably stealing one of your points, is we do not have a replacement for Michael Williams. You know, a big 280-pound tight end that can block like an extra tackle, but then also has the skill set to, you know, get away from the line of scrimmage, sneak past a defender and catch a big pass. He, you know, wasn't an awesome blocker, but he was very good, and he wasn't an awesome receiver, but he was very good. He had a high-level proficiency at both of those things. I don't know that we have – well, I do know that we don't have anyone who has those levels of proficiency across both of those required skills.
Oh, we don't. I think the guy that did the best from my opinion, was Brian Vogler and Harrison Jones, which just so happened to be, running with the ones. But those two guys who are juniors obviously, you know, did the best in blocking. But with Harrison Jones being 241 pounds, that's a far different look than that sixth offensive lineman was with Michael Williams.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I guess it's no surprise that they're the ones at the top of the list because, you know, they're the most seniority, the most time on campus. And, you know, and they're both serviceable. They're both good. They both have had some playing time. You know, maybe they can emerge, you know, like a Smelly did a couple of years ago. I think that would be nice. It would be good to see that. But we're going to miss the Michael Williams. And it almost in some regards feels like he was on campus for, you know, a dozen years because he was always there with the young emerging guy. And so, you know, Michael Williams was still doing what he did when some of those other guys were breaking out. Peak and Dial and Smelly and, you know, kind of on down the list. Williams was there too. And so it may be, and I've kind of relied on that when we talk about the tight end, that there's always the next guy up. And there has always been the next guy up. It might be a little more difficult to find that next guy up this time because, there's not a Michael Williams kind of cleaning up, providing some blocking underneath so that the emerging guy can be the pass catcher. We're going to need someone to fill both of those roles.
Oh, yeah. But like we talked about in the last podcast, we play to our strengths. And so just like we adjusted when Fowler went down, I think you're just going to see a lot more four wide and five wide. You're not going to see the two and three tight end look. I think you won't see the three tight end look at all. You'll just have an offensive lineman put in there at the goal line. But that two tight end look, I don't think you'll see much of it. And we've been fortunate to have guys come out of nowhere like an Adam Johnson who came in and did a pretty damn good job with Michael Williams.
Yeah, Kelly Johnson, yeah.
Kelly Johnson and learning from Michael Williams. And, you know, I was like, okay, who's going to be the no-name guy I've never heard of playing at the tight end position? And unfortunately, that surprise was not there.
Not yet. Now, Kelly didn't really burst onto the scene, I guess, until, you know, fall camp and, you know, who's this guy starting it? at this position, you know, he was kind of a surprise. So there's still the opportunity for someone to, you know, to kind of blow up. I still go back to, you know, and we have to remember the Michigan game last year, all of the different roles that Justin Fowler played and was just going to be a dynamic player and force throughout the season. You know, he participated in spring, you know, blackshirted the whole time, kind of bringing him along slowly. But if he approaches a percent of what he was fall camp, I think that he will be a guy that can kind of evolve into that. And if we have two big bruising running backs, Derrick Henry, then I think that, you know, we can be versatile in that way. And maybe we bring in two, you know, big honking fullback types as opposed to, you know, tight end types. So I think that, potentially we'll have the personnel. They will just be branded differently than what you would just think of a traditional big tight end.
Okay. Well, now that I've picked on Blake Sims, I want to go ahead and pick up on Phillip so that, you know, no one thinks I'm being partial here. I think it was very telling when Coach Saban told AJ to go take a seat with 12 minutes left in the second quarter so that he could get, he could get some of the younger guys some work. Yep. He didn't say Phillip. He said younger guys. And I think it was a 3rd and 12. A couple plays later, Phillip had already thrown a bad pass. 3rd and 12, they've got 4 or 5 wides, and they throw a bubble screen that Vinny reads immediately, and yes, it goes for a loss. But my point, we can go to Vinny later, is the play call had no chance of even getting the first down. It was like a give up play. So here's Phillip, right, trying to shine. This is his 3rd play of a day, 3rd and 12. And you don't even call a play, in my opinion, because on 2nd down, he threw a horrible pass.
Right.
So on 3rd down, you don't even call a play that's going to get you anywhere. You just call a play so you can punt the damn ball and bring in Alex Morris. I thought that was very telling.
Well, that specifically is, you know, if you kind of pull back and you look at, you know, Alex Morris was was 10 of 18, you know, no interceptions was probably the biggest thing from his stat line, but 18 pass opportunities, if you kind of want to circle that number. And you look at Phillip, who's been on campus a year longer, you know, he was 2 of 4. And so when you look at an A-day game, you're a third year guy on campus, and you get 4, you know, pass opportunities. You know, look, I'm not mad at the guy. I don't dislike him. I think at some point there's a writing on the wall situation. And I think that's probably the exact same expression I used
with Blake,
the offensive pre-shows, is, you know, there is a writing on the wall situation. And so when you look at, you know, look, McCarron's at the top of the list. I don't think there's any arguing that, for reasons that, you know, we could spend the next 3 weeks talking about. I think Blake is there. I think Alec Morris is there. So that's 3, whatever order you want to put them in. The best that Phillip is fighting for is 4th. But then you look at, you know, Cooper and Parker, both, you know, one of them actually did get more opportunities. You know, one, I think, had, you know, 3 opportunities to his 4. So that's kind
right.
of a wash, you know. And so you start looking at where he's falling in the pecking order. And that's exactly what we talked about, you know.
Oh, I know. Spring. Yeah.
You have to look at where he starts to fall into the pecking order, and you have to think, is this a writing on the wall situation? And maybe he transfers. And, you know, it's not so much that we predicted it, but it's something that we certainly anticipated. And so now the question is, there's been rumors about him transferring, and, you know, and he flatly denied him, and that's what you do. But now, with more information, it's not a changing of the mind so much as it's a new decision that's being made. And I think that he may well transfer.
Yeah, but see, man, you all that was about Phillip. You need to lump Blake in there too. I'm sorry. They're in the same exact boat. There is no difference to me whatsoever between the two of them. The writing's on the wall for both of them. Blake Sims even more so, because he's a junior. And there's a lot of depth at wide receiver and running back right now. And those are crowded positions. And so I think he's in the same type of boat. I doubt we're going to see both of them transfer. But if I read an article that they both have on separate days of the week, I will not be surprised.
Well, and I think I said exactly that in the preseason, and I wouldn't be surprised either. I think there's certainly similarities, you know, in their respective situations. But I do think there's a unique difference with Blake. And again, you don't have to like it. I just think it exists.
I understand. No, I understand.
And so I think that, you know, certainly one, and, you know, if I were putting them in order, I think it would be Phillip. And if there is a second one out of the whole bunch, I think clearly that would then be Blake.
All right. What else jumped out at you on the offensive side of the ball?
You know, we talked about the, you know, kind of the blah backup performance. I thought McCarron looked, I think, you know, he looked fine. I think it was a neutral sort of rhythmless day that he had. 223 yards, a touchdown, 2 picks. You know, coach even commented, you know, I'm going to bring you back in, you know, for the 2-minute drills. And so, you know, he probably had about about a 25-minute time frame where he was just standing around waiting for clock to burn so he could go play. And so completely rhythmless, completely kind of out, you know, you get out of the flow in that kind of a situation. I think he was good, but, you know, that's not what we're going to get on game day. I think we know what we're going to get on game day. And, you know, he was just kind of going through, I don't want to say going through the motions. I don't mean it negative that way. I just think he was just kind of out of rhythm. And that was just the virtue of what we were doing.
Yeah, I definitely think I'm definitely going to say I think he was going through the motions. I found the little interview he did after the game in the locker room pretty funny. He was relating it to an All-Star game, and he basically said, hey, we ran 8 plays the whole day, and the defense kind of knows what we're doing. And so there's, you know, they've got the upper hand here. And he made the analogy that the scrimmages are where they're of where the action is. And it kind of goes back to my frustration comment at the beginning. He was talking about the scrimmages that are closed, that we don't get to see.
Sure.
Where the offense goes against the defense. And that's where the real action happened, not on this day. And so I think that he, being a senior with the resume he's got, he's a competitor. And so I think in those first 2 scrimmages, his juices were flowing. But in this game, going against the matchups that he had to go up sometimes, his juices were not flowing in this game.
Yeah, you know, that's fine. I think that, and I would not go so far as to say just going through the motions, but I think that the, you know, it was a different sort of flavor maybe in the internal scrimmages where it's maybe a more expanded playbook. But, you know, just a couple other things that I saw, you know, we kind of teased them on the intro, Yeldon and Cooper. Although they both looked very sharp, I think, you know, I think we know what we have in Yeldon. He looks a little bit stronger, a little bit faster. He was player of the game 2 years in a row. That's pretty impressive. I think Cooper looked stout. He looked potentially, you know, dominating. But there were a couple times I thought that, you know, he picked his spots, kind of alligator arms some passes rather than risk getting hit.
Yeah, he definitely, the numbers would not bear out that he had a big day. It seems like those couple of screens, it seems like they were doing a lot of screens in the flats to him, you know, pushing a tight end out there to block for him. And that seemed where he had the most success, but he definitely seemed a little bit gun shy, which was a little surprising to me.
I don't know about gun shy. I thought he showed, you know, some really good athleticism on a couple of those plays. I just like that play call. How many times have we talked about, you know, if they're going to play off a wide receiver, just throw it to him and let him, you know, one-on-one make a play. And so the fact that we did that a couple times, you know, I do like pushing the tight end out there to block the cornerback. I thought on one play, you know, Vinny read it very well and ran out there to make a play. What would have been a play. I think one of the last plays before half, you know, would have been a play for a loss, but Yeldon just sidestepped him and gained about 9 yards on the play when he was really dead to rights in the backfield. Not Yeldon, Cooper. I just think Cooper in sort of flashes like that, he just showed flashes like that. But I think when, you know, he straps it on for a real game, boy, I think that he has the potential to be dominating.
Oh, and my gun shy, you can sub it for alligator arms. There was just a couple times there that he seemed to shy away from contact, which is not his MO. And so I was surprised on those couple of plays where he seemed to let off the gas a little bit.
I think every wide receiver has a little diva in him. And I think he's thinking, why am I going to get jacked up in April? I'll let that happen in the fall.
anything else jumped out at you on offense? I wanted to comment about Raheem Falkins, just the big play over the middle that he had for about 37 yards. You and I got to hear Saban lighten up Raglan, who had the right answer. And yes, sir, coach, he was the guilty party that didn't switch. But Bama ran that play that, you know, that they are so – they love so much, where they crisscross those two receivers across the middle, and they were crisscrossing them on Ryan and Reggie. And, you know, here they are trying to pick up the defense, and you're running that crap on them. And, but once Falcons had some separation, he showed some really good speed and outran several guys for what looked like an easy 37 yards.
Yeah. I think that he's going to be a player, and he's going to be an exciting one to watch. I mean, you know, he's a true tall receiver, you know, 6'4". He looks very fluid, you know, doesn't look like he's going as fast as he really is. I think he is, in his athleticism and his body type and the target that he provides, I think he is a phenomenal weapon that we're adding to the repertoire. And I know when we get in the fall camp, we'll go through position by position and rate every position. But I think last year I gave our wide receivers a 9, and I said the only thing that would keep me from giving them more than that was that we didn't have a true stud, you know, like a Julio. Well, in Cooper, we have the true stud. And everyone that was on the roster last year is back, and we've added to it. Cooper's a breakout star. Falcons is proving what he can do. Chris Black is going to be healthy, and we're going to get this Robert Foster kid. I mean, I already want to give our wide receivers an 11 out of 10 going into the season. I am very excited about what they bring to the table.
That's why I made the comment we're going to see more of these 4 and 5 wide looks. And we didn't show a lot of this in the spring game because I guess we just don't have to right now. And we didn't have a lot of DB bodies, but those three new cornerbacks, when they come in the summer, I think they're going to be getting a lot of work.
Well, put a pin in that. Who's your offensive player of the spring? And then this take it over to defense.
You know, there really wasn't anybody that really just wowed me on the offensive side of the ball. You know, Amari had those flashes you talked about. TJ was consistent. I guess if I had to give it to somebody, I'd probably have to give it to DeAndre White. I guess I'd give it to him and Kenny Bell. I think given the injuries that they've had, Kenny Bell came out there and looked very comfortable running around and moving, and DeAndre White made a couple good plays. And so if those two guys can come back and not skip a beat, that's huge for this offense.
Yeah, I completely agree. Those are nice guys to have back. Tremendous depth in the wide receiver core. You know, we're going too deep at some of the receivers that, you know, Tommy, in days past, they would have been, you know, our top starters. So that's certainly exciting. You know, I guess just underscoring the strength of the position, and I think I've kind of used all my material, but my player on offense is Cooper. You know, all I can say, and I kind of wrote it here, the potential to be devastating. And I look forward to watching him. I think there was an interview or something, and he talked about, yeah, well, I've got two more years on campus. You know, he knows how good he is. And gosh, I'm glad we have him for two more years.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, flip us over to defense, man. What'd you see on defense?
You know, the first play I commented on to you was the Kenny Bell big pass play where Cyrus was beat. He tried to do more than he had to do. He tried to turn and get in front of Kenny Bell when he was already closing on the ball. All he had to do was just put a hand up and, you know, please play DB in high school. He'll pick up some of these things, and maybe it was playing in front of the crowd. Who knows? But the closing speed on that play is why I think Saban is trying him on that side of the ball.
Oh,
he made up 25 yards on a fast Kenny Bell, and that caught my eye on defense.
Yeah, I think the ball sat up a little bit, so that helped him to do that. But his closing speed, I think, was very, very impressive. And just seeing that alone was enough for me to say this guy has the chops to play on the defense. Now, I'm going to ask you honestly, because, you know, we watched it, that play, and then we watched that play, and then we watched that play. Are you really of the opinion that Cyrus Jones was beat?
Yes. Well, was he beat? Obviously, he was not the guy. He was not beat on the play. He was coming over to provide help.
Okay.
But was he beat once he got there? Yes, because he got there in plenty of time to knock the ball away.
See, so I think it's unfair to say, you know, well, Kenny Bell beat Cyrus Jones on a 40-yard pass route.
Bell outfought Cyrus Jones and wanted the ball more than Cyrus Jones at the goal line and made Cyrus Jones look silly when Cyrus Jones got there. Yes, he did.
Well, I think he bumped Kenny Bell and kind of played off because he thought it was a pass interference. And, you know, I think he lost sight of the ball. And I think all those things are fair. But to say that he got beat on the play, you know, it's not like he slipped and fell or turned the wrong way. You know, Kenny Bell was lined up in the slot. We had four DBs. Vinny and HaHa were the safeties, and Deion and Cyrus were the corners. Vinny was lined up very close to the line of scrimmage on the slot, and HaHa had over-the-top coverage. Well, you know that Vinny's not going to be able to stay with Kenny Bell, so you know that, you know, that HaHa is going to have the over-the-top coverage. Well, Bell came off the line. HaHa, for reasons I do not know, he went to the sideline with Blue to double cover Amari. That left the whole center of the field wide open for Kenny Bell, and with his speed, right? And so it was tremendously impressive to see Cyrus Jones make up that ground and get there to even be in the proximity of Kenny Bell and the ball. And so the fact that he gets there and he's a little bit discombobulated, I am more impressed with his recovery than I am just the last seconds there with the ball. And if I'm going to be disappointed with anybody for getting beat, it's going to be HaHa for covering the wrong guy than it is Cyrus for coming across and nearly making a play.
Well, hey, man, we can mince words. I call it beat, okay? I told you I was impressed with his closing speed. But when you get there to the ball and you're standing right next to him and the ball's coming down, and you're at the goal line and you're close enough that you can hug him and he outfights you for the ball, yes, you got beat. If you want to say he got beat for the last 2 seconds of the play, then you can say that. But he got beat when it counts.
Well, we've had cornerbacks
finish the play.
We've had cornerbacks that wouldn't be in the same zip code as the play. So
sure, I started off by talking about his closing speed, but at the end of the day, he didn't do. If you're gonna go through all the work to get there, then make it count. And he didn't make it count.
Well, he didn't do a Rashad. He wasn't Rashad Johnson and grabbing the ball. I'm with you there. But I just, you know, there were more dynamics to that play that I think it's good to point out as well. So
sure. That's what I started off with when I talked about his closing speed.
Nope, that's fair.
It was very interesting to get a glimpse of, you know, what we wanted to see last year at the A-Day game in the linebacker stud, young studs. I think we finally got to see it. You know, it was nice to be able to see flashes from Ryan Anderson, Duvall, Dylan Lee, and Reggie Ragland. I enjoyed seeing those four youngsters all kind of have some significant playing time.
Yeah, what a just a meaty linebacker core, and you think most of them are, you know, after DePriest and Mosley and, you know, Xavier and Hubbard, you know, those are the backups. Those are some very strong linebackers, and Ryan Anderson, I thought, looked very, very good. He looked unblockable at times. Granted, you know, maybe that was Leon Brown, but he looks like he has it, and we're going to see him in the fall.
I think him and Reggie, because obviously Dylan got a little playing time, and so did Duvall, and we've talked about Duvall on many occasions. I think Ryan and Reggie looked comfortable. And we sat there wondering, okay, well, why aren't we seeing Ryan play? And, you know, this not who we expected to get redshirted, et cetera. For whatever reason, those two guys feel like they're able to, whether it's having a grasp of the defense and being able to just fly to the ball and not have to think about it as much. You know, they looked more comfortable out there. And I will say at the beginning of the game on Blake Sims' first play from scrimmage, the tight end goes into the middle of the defense. And I think this was Ryan and Reggie's first play on defense. They both at middle linebacker, they both attacked the same tight end. Yeah. And they left the outside open for Blake to scramble for 9 yards, but then they learned from it. And you didn't see that again. But as the game went on, those two seemed to be flying to the ball quicker and quicker.
They look very good, very comfortable, and I'm excited to see them progress and develop. I think they're going to be good players for us.
Hey, did you see Ryan Anderson get to assume a Courtney or Dante Hightower role on third and long, and they bumped him up there with his hand in the dirt at defensive end?
Yeah, I think that he's gonna play a material role in the pass rush.
See, I think he's got a little Duvall in him. I think there's some similarities between those two guys, because Duvall looked really good rushing the quarterback. He was giving Austin Shepherd everything he wanted a couple times. And, you know, we got to transition and talk with some Jeffrey Pagan. Remember we talked about that play where he kind of read the play and came in front of Cyrus and just blew it up in the backfield?
Yeah, Cyrus was blocking down into where Pagan was stunning. And you would think that would be a perfect setup for Cyrus, but Pagan still beat him.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you would, I mean, he made it look easy too. And, that was the flash from Pagan of all the plays that were made. That was the Pagan play that kind of jumped out at me.
Yeah. I completely agree. What do you make of Tanner Patrick and his 6 tackles?
Let's go back and replay the beginning of the podcast. That's another area for frustration. You can put him in the Blake Sims category. I sat there and went back and watched the first quarter again because I wanted to see what he was doing. And Tana Patrick, you got a scholarship. I didn't. You're obviously a better athlete than I ever was. But why you're in there with CJ running with the first team instead of giving some reps to some of these other guys inside that really need the reps that, I mean, they got the reps on the second team, but I don't get it. Let's just replay what we talked about earlier. I don't get it.
That was a longer answer I expect. I just thought you'd say no.
Well, hey, what do you think about Fanning? I just wanted to touch on him for a quick second. I noticed when they were running the second defense that they were lining him up at the nose tackle. Now, obviously, they've got some depth issues because of at the position, but that's not who I would have thought that would have been running inside at the nose guard position.
No, I think we have a definite weakness there at the nose guard position. I think we're just giving people reps just to give them an opportunity, and he's one of the guys that got some reps there. I think we have a big need there, and so we just plugged him in.
But, you know, that goes back to some of my frustration also, man. I mean, you know, and when I talked about depth at the beginning, I mean, we were playing guys with the ones, okay, because we had to give Pagan and Ivory and Stinson a breather, right? Well, guess who the other two guys were with them? Wilson Love and Dakota Ball. You know, why didn't we have an Anthony Orr or LaMichael Fanning or somebody over there with the ones getting more reps than having them all botched up with the twos? I didn't understand that.
I couldn't explain that roster management move. I don't know. We're apparently just looking at other people in those positions.
Well, I did notice Dalvin Tomlinson and Anthony Orr early in the game. They both were playing at defensive end, and they're both sitting here running 282 and 287, just like we talked about with the linebackers. Those two guys, there might be some good future there with those two guys.
Oh, I thought Davlin looked very good.
Anthony Orr, I thought he kind of held his own at the point of attack as well. I didn't think he looked as I thought he looked pretty good as well. Did Darren or Brandon Ivory do anything that jumped out for you at the nose?
Nothing really that jumped out. I'm hoping that they can continue to progress. If they don't, then they're subject to losing that position to freshman Stewart when he comes in from Texas.
Well, hey, let's talk about some Deion Ballou, man. I know you've been dying to do this, and we called. You know, people had talked about him being a shutdown corner in the making last season. And, you know, that was the rep that he was getting. And, man, I'm going to call it a game, even though it wasn't a game. This might be the best time I've seen him in Bryant Denny.
Definitely the best performance I think that we've seen from him. He continues to get better and better. And he made some phenomenal plays against Cooper, going up and batting the ball away. He must have had two or three batted balls that would have been completions. One would have been a touchdown. It seemed like, you know, and we heard a lot in last year's fall campus about him being a shutdown type corner, but we never really saw it in the season. I saw it on A-Day.
Oh, yeah, there was a third down play at the goal line where A.J. decided to try to do a go route to Kenny Bell down the left sideline. And he was running step for step with Kenny Bell. He was right inside of Kenny Bell. There was nowhere for Kenny to go with to make a play on the ball. I mean, it was nice. I hope that we continue to see that. Now, conversely, I didn't see Gino do anything to upset me, but I didn't see any flashes from him that I recall on the tape that made me just kind of say, wow.
No, he had a very quiet game, but you know, kind of related to Gino, I think I read something today that is probably the dumbest thing that I've read about Alabama football in a while. And someone was sharing their surprise that Cyrus Jones had already beat out Gino Smith in the depth chart.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty ludicrous because, you know, clearly we're giving Cyrus a lot of reps because we need depth at the cornerback position with John Fulton not able to go. And Gino, I think our preference would be to play him at the star. So we're trying to find another lockdown cover corner. And given that person a ton of reps, it's not that Gino was beat.
No, I agree. There were several times that all three of them were on the field together with the three wide formations. What was your thoughts on Nick Perry and Jarrett Williams? Because, you know, we talked about Nick Perry earlier. I thought it was interesting that Nick Perry played exclusively with the twos. Him and Jarrett Williams were the starting safeties on the twos.
Yeah, I think it's all about giving them reps and really giving them reps in a pure safety position. You know, Vinny was up there. He's going to play a lot of dime back, and so I think that That's why he was with the starters. I think that was less so him beating out Landon Collins. It's just you start to mix up the personnel groupings. Where can I get my nickels and dimes in the backfield? And so you kind of have to spread talent that way. And Nick Perry can play nickel and dime. So you don't want all your safeties that can play nickel and dime on the same side. So I think that's part of it.
Oh, yeah. And I will say, Vinny, I think Vinny just echoed what we said last year about he needs to be at the line of scrimmage more, because when you have him in coverage, like on the Kenny Bell play, right, having him in zone is not his thing. But he made several plays on those bubble screens where he read those things at the line of scrimmage, like when he did with Christian Jones. I think the one I referenced when Philip Ely was trying to complete that 3rd and 12. Vinny looked very comfortable in that front 5 yards on the defensive side of the ball. I think that's where his role needs to be.
Yeah, closer to the line of scrimmage. I treat him more as a spur linebacker than I do a safety. But, you know, in our system, he's going to be a safety. He's going to play the money position. But I think he's dropped a little bit of weight. He's not a burner. He's never going to be a burner. But I think he's maybe, you know, a half a step faster than he was last season. And he reads plays so well. How many times did we see him just break on the ball, leave his guy to go contribute to the play? And he didn't always finish the tackle, didn't always finish the wrap up, but he was there making contact. And hey, he'll get his arms around the guy and make the tackle. It wasn't there Saturday, but man, his reading the play, that's the part you can't teach. I can teach you how to tackle when you get there, but if you don't know how to read the play to get there, it doesn't matter how good you can tackle.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. No, some of the plays that he made, I was definitely impressed with. Did anything else jump out at you on defense?
I just, you know, one of the things we talked about in the pre-spring was the significance of a third corner emerging to play the star position. And you know, a little bit of hyperbole, not a lot, but I thought that the key position to the entire defense was solving that star position. And I don't think we did it. And I think that's part of the reason we played Cyrus so much at DB, because we're trying to give him some reps. And if we can free up Gino to play the star, then, you know, I think that answers the question. But I think it was critical. It was critical in my mind that this spring we could not get John Fulton on the field. Because if he could have gotten onto the field and legitimately earned that other corner spot to free up Gino in the star, man, I would be so pleased with our defense. And it's not that I'm not pleased. It's just I'm nervous because we don't have that third cornerback. And I'm looking at the players coming in the fall, and I'm looking at which one of these guys is going to be next year's Gino, because we have to have somebody. And I think that, and I think Fulton not participating really just keeps that question, keeps that position in limbo for me. And I'm just uncomfortable with that.
Yeah. I think Cyrus is just being looked at for backup for depth potential right now. I think Saban thinks John Fulton's going to be that guy. John Fulton, the light switch came on for him, you know, not to rehash last season on this podcast, but when he was playing with that turf toe and still making some plays in that SEC championship game, when he was obviously being picked on by the Georgia receivers, he showed me something in that game that he had not shown me all year. And so I'm optimistic for him to come back and to step in there. But we definitely, you know, we didn't see anything from a Jabril Washington. We didn't see anything from a Jai Miller. I was hoping to see something from him just because I was more curious. But to your point, we had confirmation that we've got 4 to 5 serviceable safeties and 2 serviceable corners.
And that's where and I share your optimism on John Fulton. I would like to have seen it in the spring. I'd like to be able to say, oh, yeah, now I've seen it. Now I know, as opposed to, well, I'm still optimistic that he has it, because I've been optimistic on him for 3 years now.
Well, but also, too, man, when you say you'd feel good about the defense, I got to challenge you for a second. And let's just quickly go back to one of the other topics in the pre-spring. You know, you had it listed as nose guard competition. If you're nervous about your corner position, you need to equally be nervous about the nose guard, because Brandon Ivory did not show me anything that made me say, wow. And I don't want Pagan to have to be forced to play inside, which we said would happen, which we didn't see in the game. But I didn't see anything from a Darren Lake. I didn't see anything from an Alfonso Taylor getting moved over. And I didn't see anything from a Corin Curvin that made me jump up and clap my hands. So the nose guard position is equally, that to me is the other question mark on this defense right now.
The other question mark, absolutely. It's just the second question mark.
But that's a biggie. No. We saw in the SEC championship game when Jesse Williams went out of the game and Georgia started running the ball down our throats in the middle of the field. We saw what happened when Jesse Williams came out of the game. I would argue that it is a bigger well, that's our two Achilles heels, is we have to be able to stop the run. That is huge for us. And then second of all, we can't let wide receivers go against our safeties. That is the Achilles heel of how to beat the Alabama defense.
Yeah, I think there's more help available. Look, I'm not saying it's not important. You know, it's that whole, you know, semantics thing. I'm going to say that the star is going to be more important than the nose guard, but they're both important. When we talk about the nose guard, literally the center of the defense, that's a critical position, but we could rotate to a four-man front. We can, move in some linebackers.
Bacon in the middle or whatever.
Yeah, there's more assistance there.
Yes.
And I guess
there's more bodies to throw in there.
Right. And so maybe that's where I'm differentiating, and I'm using that to plug, you know, star is number one. Hell, we've got to have a third corner. We have four or five bodies that could play nose. We just don't have a Cody or a Chapman or a Jesse Williams. We don't have a star at the position, but we have bodies that we could put at the position. At corner, I don't know yet that we even have bodies to put at the position.
I'm with you. So, who was your breakout defensive player in the game?
Dion Ballou. I mean, so I'm lamenting corners, and my breakout performer was a corner. Boy, he looked good.
He did. He definitely, I think, took a step up there in this ball game. This was turning the page for him. And something else I'm going to say that's going to surprise you equally as got my attention was the play of Vinny. I'm not going to say he's a Tyrone Mathieu. I'm not going to say he's a honey badger.
He's a honky badger.
He is the closest thing we have on our football team. He is that pesky little, gosh, you are such a pain in the ass to my offense. And because he's got that knack, he's going to be there all the time. You can't get him off the field because of that trait.
Right.
I mean, he even sat there on the kickoff, the first kickoff of the A-Day game, and hustled down the field. And knowing that I can't tackle him, I can only touch him, he still dove at about the 10-yard line. He ran right by three guys, and then he dove at the 10-yard line to reach out and touch the guy on his thigh. In the A-Day game, on the first kickoff, are you freaking kidding me? That's why he's who he is.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad to hear you say something nice about him. My work here is done.
Hey, let's talk about special teams for a quick second here. Sure. I was not impressed by Cade Foster's first field goal attempt. I thought he was going to put some leg in it and drill that 20-something yard or 28-yard, whatever it was. You know, he made it great, but it seemed like when he kicked it and it left his foot, it was not a great angle, but I wasn't sure based on how he hit it, whether he was going to make it or not. And I was thinking, son of a gun, I hope that's not going to be the case week in and week out.
I think we may be in for some adventures in the kicking game.
Oh, I hope not, man. I hope not.
I'm afraid that we may be. He may have just been, so amazed to see how big the goalposts look from that close that he almost, sort of short-legged it. I don't know. I'm trying to be funny, but I wonder if we're not in for a long season at that position. Hopefully he can get it together, or this
that Adam Griffith.
Adam Griffith, who redshirted, that he can get it together. Because we had some amazing stability, you know, especially last season, but really the last 2 years with Shelley and his consistency, you know, on those short kicks. And I think we intentionally last year, and you and I have dissected this, I think, pretty well, but we intentionally tried to get inside the zone of the short kick and not rely so much on the need for the long kick. Now, we still had to from time to time, but I think we were intentional in trying to get it into Shelley's range. This year, I guess we're going to have to figure out, well, who is it that has range and what is it, and then how do we intentionally manage to that?
Oh, sure. I thought Cody had a good day and his limited opportunities. I just hope he can continue to be consistent because that can be a weapon for us. But, you know, the other thing that jumped out at me is, you know, we were talking about Vinny a minute ago on the defensive side of the ball. I think it was the first kickoff of the game. You know, they're not tackling. They're just playing touch football. And he runs down the field, splits two on a wedge, runs around a third guy, and he dives at about the 10-yard line, and he hits the guy on his thigh. And so it was like, I'm going to give all this effort and even dive at you and give my body up to try to be the first one down the field to touch you. And I just that just epitomizes the effort we were talking about with him a minute ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, he's a football player. You know, I've used the analogy. He speaks the language of football. He dissects plays, reads them well, you know, gets to the point of attack. He's an exciting player. You know, I'm glad that we have him because he would be quite an annoying player to have to play against.
Oh, absolutely. I also noticed, you know, we talked about the linebackers earlier. If this holds up, you had Reggie Ragland and Ryan Anderson, and then you had headhunters like Landon Collins and then Vinny. Some of those guys on the kickoff coverage, and then you throw in the speed that you're able to throw in there with your running backs that they had in there as well, and you know, a D Hart type of figure that was in there as well, and you know, that could be a strength of this team again is the kickoff coverage.
Absolutely. You know, we're not a perfect team. There's going to be opportunities for young kids to come in and play. But, you know, maybe jokingly, I'd say it may be tough for some of them to crack a role on special teams because just the level of talent that we do have.
Oh, yeah. Hey, anything else in special teams for you before we wrap up?
Not special teams. Let me ask you, what was your, you know, biggest, you know, maybe positive and one positive and one, I don't want to say negative, but opportunistic. What would be your biggest pro and con surprises for the spring?
I guess my biggest surprise was how much Blake Sims played. My biggest thing I was the most happy about would have to be Deion Ballou and showing me that he can be a shutdown corner. What about you?
I think probably my biggest surprise was you saying something nice about Vinny. And so I just got that now. Joking aside, I think the biggest positive that I saw was Cyrus Jones and his transition to cornerback. I'm not saying he's going to be a starter. I certainly don't think he's beat out Geno, but I think that he gives us some quality depth at that position. He clearly, I think, has beat out other guys at the position, Jabari Wilson and Brandon Silvey to name two. And so I think that he's squarely in the mix. And so that's a positive. He was a little bit in my doghouse last year. Mine, you know, maybe not coaches, is, you know, I'm just a guy. But he was a little bit on my list for some of his kickoff returns. And so now I think he's on a different list. I'm very pleased with how he performed, his closing speed, his aggression. Very pleased about that. And then just generally, I would say maybe an opportunity or maybe, you know, disappointment. I'd go with the backup quarterbacks. And I would say just across the board, I did not see someone clearly emerge as the backup. I still think we have two starting backup quarterbacks, which, you know, I know aggravates you even as I say it, which really means that we do not have that position as well defined as either of us would like. And so I find that disappointing. I expected Alec to kind of separate himself and clearly did not see that.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot to bitch about in the next 4 months.
Absolutely. Anything else? Just general overall thoughts for May Day?
No, I think we pretty well covered it.
I've just got one little footnote I want to put out there is the format of A-Day. Saban has come in and just, here's our format, here's what we do. How many years have we seen some screwball where the teams draft, or we have some scheme where it's all offense against all defense, and then they have some screwball scoring system? You know, there's been 117 articles written in the past about how we're going to do A-Day. How are they going to divvy up the team? What's the coach going to do? You know, Fran was in the press box doing radio during the game. Saban says, look, we play ones against ones. We play twos against twos. There may be a little bit of blending or blurring of the lines there to get the right personnel groupings set up. I'm going to stand behind the line of scrimmage. I'm going to have veto power over play calling, personnel groupings, and penalties, and that's how we're going to do it. I don't want to hear any questions.
You know, as we said at the beginning, I wasn't happy with that format for this particular group of players, because given the injuries and given some of the position depths, the matchups just didn't blend together well enough for my liking as they have in years past. I would be fine with just an all-out scrimmage. You know, I don't need to hear it's for the fans. Why don't you show me a scrimmage like you did in the first two scrimmages? You know, don't show me plays that you don't need to show me. But, hell, I wouldn't mind if they just got out there and did offense against defense and went up and down the field and did a scrimmage for an hour. I'd enjoy that.
Well, I'm with you. I would enjoy that, too. That's not what a lot of folks that show up and kind of make a deal of it, probably what they're looking for. But, you know, you can't please all the people. I mean, you know, we'll have empty stands in the fourth quarters of games. So
right.
It sometimes surprises me that we have so many people there for A-Day, because, you know, for the real games that count in the ledger, you know, people are leaving in the fourth quarter to beat traffic when games are still, you know, still in question. So,
oh, sure.
So what do you do? Hey, just in closing, just in wrapping up, you know, I probably want to throw two very disconnected thoughts, you know, on the table. When we did our pre-spring, we were given thoughts and prayers and well wishes to Mal Moore. Unfortunately, you know, his time has passed, and so it's a great loss for the university. The wealth of his experience and the range of his experience, you know, it was certainly a blessing that we had him as AD and some of the things that he's done. In some regards, I would just say irreplaceable. And so we'll certainly mourn the loss of and passing of Mal, and you know, best wishes to his family. Clearly, a disconnected point from Mal. We're still collecting feedback from our potential premium show in the fall. Just so everyone's aware, we spent some time introducing it in the pre. We're looking at doing a new show in addition to all of the existing content that you get for free today. So this will be a brand new show. It would be a pregame show that we would do and break down the opponents, offense, defense, before every game. And so we want to put that out there as an offering. It would be a premium show. And before we commit to doing the show, we want to make sure that we have sufficient interest. And so we've received, you know, a lot of interest, not enough such that we would take on the endeavor. As much as Tom and I love to talk football, we have families and in the prep work. And so, and then just the cost of doing the show, that we'd want to at least be able to offset that. So we're not going to be an incessant plea for contributions like you would get from a national public radio. This will probably be the last plug you get. We get a lot of good feedback from listeners. We have quite a number of downloads. I just think there's a disconnect, and so we want to ask one more time, if this is something you'd be interested in, reach out, drop us an email, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com, and it's something that costs about $10 for the whole season, and so you get a pregame show for every game. It's less than $1 an episode, so if that's something that's of interest to you, just drop us a quick email, and we'll certainly tally those counts and make a decision here before too long. But we do appreciate everyone's interest. We appreciate everyone listening. And, hey, we're going to continue to do what we do, and we appreciate you for listening and tuning in. So with that, I'd like to say thanks for listening to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve,
or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.